Thanks, Hunter. Our group has asked Nate to share his story with us.
Is there supposed to be a mic or?
You gotta adjust it.
Oh, okay. There we go. All right, I'm Nate. I'm an alcoholic. I just want to say good job to you. That was I related a lot to that, and yeah, good job. Anyways, I was asked to speak a couple days ago here, and one thing I learned early is not to say no to AA. So I hate speaking. I get real nervous. I talk a lot in meetings. I'll share some real crazy shit in meetings. But when it comes to just speaking, it's always nerve-wracking. But I'll do the same thing, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I do have a sponsor. I'm available to sponsor. I've sponsored a few other guys. And my sobriety date is January 1st, 2015. I didn't make like a New Year's resolution. It just kind of worked out that way. Let's see. My childhood, I came from a alcoholic family, a long line of alcohol. I'm Irish, so my grandfather had died from alcoholism before I was even born. My dad left before I was born. My mom. I guess the first time alcoholism affected me and my brother was my mom tried to kill herself with a bunch of pills when me and my brother were just infants. And well, my brother was a little older. He was like a toddler. I was an infant. And the state came in and were taking me and my brother away kind of into state custody, and my grandmother ended up intervening. But yeah, I guess that's the first time it directly affected me. My dad, I didn't really know him. I met him a couple times. He never really acknowledged me the three times I met him, though. I think he was just pissed at my mom. I couldn't blame him, I guess, now looking back at it. So I was moved up to his family because they thought by doing that, maybe getting away from my crazy mom, that maybe he would kind of come in the picture a little bit. And it turned out to be a real abusive family that took us in. And my grandmother didn't know that it was going on. It went on for about a year and a half. And then when they found out, they came and got us immediately. But a lot of damage had been done. My grandmother kind of explained it as like when I came back, I looked like a little, like if you ever go to the pound and you see like an abused animal and you see their eyes, they look real crazy. She said that's kind of how I looked. And I guess I couldn't use the drink then. I didn't know I was an alcoholic then. But my first real addiction I can relate with, I had a real addictive personality, was like anger. Because when I got angry and I lost my temper and I got in fights and stuff, I kind of got respect or I got attention or people didn't mess with me or it let me take control of certain situations that I felt powerless in a way. So I did a lot of fighting growing up. And I ended up moving back in with my mom when I was about 7 or 8. And she lived in like Section 8 housing, South Greenwood, Clearwater. Like we lived in a terrible neighborhood, and it was bad. A lot of just freedom to do whatever we wanted. By the age of 10, I guess that's when I started really getting into smoking weed, doing drugs, drinking, and that year a lot of things changed. I got arrested my first time when I was 10 years old. My dad ended up getting murdered when I was 10, and I started getting in trouble in school, and things just started kind of going downhill at that age. It was all I knew. But then I'd go to my grandmother's on the weekend, and my grandmother had this like loving, you know, environment. She was real nice. My grandfather, my new grandfather that she had married, he was an architect, so they had money and stuff. And I didn't really want for anything. Like that, I always had like new shoes and clothes, and She ended up taking me back in just because it was too much for my mom to deal with. My mom, the way she dealt with me and my brother was just call the police, you know? That's it. We had the cops at our house like every night. It was ridiculous. We knew them by like first name, and they'd come in and have a cup of coffee, and my mom would be drinking, and it was crazy. So anyways, I went with my grandmother, and my grandmother and them, she really tried her best with me, you know, but by the time I was 14, I was on intensive indefinite probation. I would go to the detention center every other month for like 21 days. I was just, and my grandmother was kind of good in the community. She was like the head of the juvenile justice board, and my judge actually served underneath her. So they were friends, and they finally were like, you know, what are we gonna do with them? And she's just like, I don't know. I mean, I'd been arrested like 14, 15 times by then or something like that. And so they ended up they were gonna send me to the Dozier School for Boys, which I had heard the stories about it, so I got scared. And when I was in the detention center, I waited for the guard to walk by, and I started like scratching myself, and he's like, well, you know, what are you doing? And they called me State Baby. That was my nickname in the detention center because I was in there all the time. And I was like a little, like 120 pound. I was a tiny, skinny kid. And like, what you doing in there, State Baby? And I was like, I wanna die. And so they sent me to another place, and that was DeSoto Juvenile Correctional Facility, which was a maximum security juvenile prison. And it was, for like criminally insane people and like crazy, crazy people. So I fit right in, and they just would give me pills for everything. It was Seroquel, Depakote, Remeron, Risperdal, Trizodone. I took Thorazine pills. I didn't even know those existed. I thought that was just what they shot you up with when you got mad or whatever. They did that a lot too. And I ended up spending about a year and a half in there. I wasn't supposed to get out, but my grandmother kind of intervened, and they kind of let me pass the level program. I could never pass the level. Part of it was just to not talk. Like, if you talked, you would get, like, written up, and if you do that 3 times a day, then you fail your day. And if you don't get, like, 60 days in a row, you don't pass this level. It was, like, it was set up to fail, man. I couldn't pass that. It was crazy. And plus, I got in a lot of fights and stuff, and... Anyways, so I ended up getting out of there. My grandmother said she was going to take me into a new location, so she moved me up to Tampa. I went from, you know, I was going to school in Southside St. Pete before I went into that place. Then I moved up to North Tampa, and I was going to school at Gaither High School. And it was like a whole different culture shock, you know, like kids wore flip-flops without socks, you know. They just had like socks, like sandals with no socks. And I always, you know, I wore slides, but I always had socks in them. So I was just like, that's different, you know. It was just different, you know. Everything was different. So I tried to fit in. I got playing football. I was doing good. I always did good in school. That's one thing I can say. I always did good in school. I took my SAT. I scored in the top 20% of the nation. I was going to go to college. I had all these things going good. But I kept drinking. I kept drinking, and I kept getting in fights, so I kept getting arrested. And by the time I was set to graduate high school, I spent my last 6 months of high school in jail. I got arrested. I picked up 3 cases in a week, or a week and a half. And they all happened at keg parties. There were several first-degree felonies. And I think you had to score out to like 56 points to go to prison, or 46 at that time. And I had like over 200, almost 300 points. And I was looking at a lot of time, and I was scared, and I was like, I'll never drink again, you know. And I was only like 17, 18. They had tried me as an adult because my juvenile record was already pretty bad. And, you know, I got a lawyer, and my grandma, I think, spent most of her life savings on lawyers for me, to be honest with you. I guess that's why I never got to go to one of those fancy treatment centers. And I just kept getting in trouble, man. I don't know what to say. It's I got out of that one again. You know, I only did about 6 months in the county jail, and I got put on probation. And Judge Perry was my circuit judge, and he I guess now he just handles VOPs. But then he was handling my case, and he called me Mr. Keg Party. And yeah, and it turned out his daughter was at one of the keg parties I got in trouble in. So he didn't like me at all. And well, anyways, I got put on probation, and he said, you know, don't drink, don't leave the county, and stay away from keg parties completely. That was my probation. That was like part of it. And so within like a month, I left the county. I went to Gainesville to go to a keg party. And because my friend was playing football up there. So we went up there. I was having a great time. It was a good night. You know, I started getting drunk. And same thing that always happened with me. You know, I got in a fight. And this time, you know, I got in a fight. And the guy that I got in a fight with, actually, he died. And I got arrested the next day. And it was kind of like one of those episodes of First 48 Hours, you know, like I was put in there. And I was more worried about violating my probation, because Judge Perry said if he saw me again, he was going to give me the max. And that's part of probation. You know, they can max you out if you violate. And he said he was going to damn sure max me out. And so I was worried about that, but I didn't know that the guy had died yet. And then I found that out. And I think at that point is when I kind of lost faith in God. Not that I lost faith in God, but I thought that now there's nothing I can pray to God ever again. All the foxhole prayers that we have, you know what I mean, of God, get me out of this one, I'll never do it again. I had done that so many times, you know. I'd spent so much time incarcerated already. I was just like, you know, I was only 19 years old, and I was just like, okay, well, this is it, you know. And there ended up being another lawyer and technicalities and stuff like that. And I ended up only going to prison for about a year and a half, and I got blessed. But the day I got out, I was already drunk. I actually stayed up the first 3 days I got out, because I did so much coke and Adderall while I was drinking. And it was like, I came home and my grandmother was just like, what the fuck, you know, what are you doing? I was like, I'm not doing nothing, you know. It was bad. And I don't know, I just say that, man, because it just shows the unmanageability, you know what I mean? It just shows that no matter what, I always would go right back to drinking and using drugs. And it was that guy's fault. If that guy wouldn't have fucking swung a baseball bat at me, I wouldn't have hit him so hard, you know what I mean? It's like all this stuff, it was never me. It was never the fact that I left fucking Tampa to go up to Gainesville to go to a keg party and went against everything I was supposed to do. You know, I didn't look at that. I always looked at everybody else and the excuses. And I ended up getting out of that. That was a long story. I don't want to get into too much. So then my brother was raised kind of the same way. Actually, he never left my mom, because he would go to detention center after detention center. He went to a lot of programs. And he ended up, the last time getting arrested, he got probation. And the judge told him, or he told the judge, I don't want probation. I want to go to a treatment center or rehab. And I was like, you're fucking stupid. You just could have walked out the door. You're trying to go do more time. And it didn't make sense to me. It didn't make sense. But he was a little smarter than me. And he's been sober ever since. He's been sober ever since. He's been about 13 years now. And it was pretty amazing. But one thing I noticed about him is, for a long time I pointed at him as like, he's fucked up. I got an 1160 on my SAT, this fucker, you know. But there was no looking bad. Like, it looked bad then. Like, his life was, he was doing good and I was doing real bad. You know, I just got out of prison for a murder charge, and he's like starting his own shit, and just like there was no difference, there was a big difference. And so I ended up using and drinking for a few more years, and I stopped getting arrested so much. I'd been arrested a few times since that, but nothing like real serious, you know. I went to jail once or twice, but it wasn't like anything super bad, you know, compared to the old stuff. So, but I hit a pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And I needed to hit that bottom because, you know, getting fucked up and getting arrested and going to jail over and over, that's one thing. But to be out free and not be able to stop, not be able to control my drinking, my using and stuff like that, and really realizing how miserable I was and just kind of wanting to die. My brother was the first person I called, and he took me to my first meeting. This was about 5 years ago. And I didn't hear anything. It kind of sounded like Charlie Brown noises, you know, like I didn't want to be part of it. I actually went to the other fellowship and they tried to hug me and shit. And I was like, no, I've been to prison and, you know, like old black dudes trying to be real nice to me. I'm like, you know, what are you going to ask me for a dollar? Like, get away from me. Like, I was just like real standoffish. And I really focused on all the differences instead of the similarities. I sat in the back. I went to meetings late. I left early. I made myself unapproachable. You know, I kind of sat with my arms crossed, like, and if people talked to me, I'd be like, fine, you know, I'm doing fine, you know. And I heard that means fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. And I guess that's exactly how I was doing. And I relapsed a lot. You know, I went to this noon meeting every day for about 9 months. And I just shared burning desires, you know. It was just burning desires. But I never stayed after the meeting for anybody to talk to me. Nobody liked me in that meeting, I don't think. I was on the way there one day, and I was about 9.5 months, we'll call it clean and crazy. And I was driving my truck. I had a big truck back then, and I was just letting the wheel go and closing my eyes, and it would start drifting off the road, and it'd start bouncing, and then I was a pussy, so I pulled it back on, and I kept doing that, you know, and I just wanted to die. I don't know anything else to say. That's kind of where my head was at. My grandmother called me, and I picked up the phone, and I'm like, yeah, hey, Grandma, everything's okay, you know. And then I ended up pulling into the meeting, and then I kind of shared to the meeting how I was feeling. And these motherfuckers talked about their Tico bills, and not one person talked about my burning desire and about how I wanted to die. So I said, fuck them. And I went out and drank. And within a week, I actually, my kidneys shut down, my heart stopped, and I was pronounced dead. It wasn't just from alcohol, obviously, but I woke up in Tampa General, you know, in ICU, and I got out. I got checked myself out 2 days early, and I was drinking that night. And, you know, about another month or so, I ended up back in the meetings. And it went like that for another few years. I didn't do the steps, man. I was so impressed with the newer guy was saying, man, you've done fucking more than me. I was like, wow, this guy's like getting diplomas and all kinds of shit, paying off fines, man. That's what works, though. That's what works. Just some of us don't get it as quickly, you know. So I came in. I'll just share my last time. You know, I relapsed. Everything was going good in my life. I had a good job. So I figured I'd get another job since I had all that time. And so then I stopped going to meetings, and then I joined this church, and it was kind of a cult. And then they kicked me out for sexual immorality. Whatever. They suggested we shouldn't have sex in our first year too, I guess. I don't know. So that failed. And then I ended up relapsing, man. And you know what it was is, even though things were going good, it seemed like inside I was miserable. I just wanted to die, man. And I was out for a couple months, and you know, I got Baker acted. I was in the hospital about six times within that couple months. I went to detox. It was just the same shit over and over. And you know, I kind of hit my bottom in Howard Johnson off Nebraska and Fowler. And I was in a room with drugs and guns and, you know, people like me. And I just kind of, it was about 6 a.m. and I was drinking. I couldn't get any more drunk, any more high. And I just kind of was like, man, my home group before that was the 6:30 a.m. meeting at Yana. And I was like, man, those people are in there right now feeling good. And I just kind of thought about how I used to feel when I went to meetings. And I was like, I need to go back to that. So I told my friend, you know, this is bad. Like, there's hookers, there's guns, there's drugs. You guys, this is fucking. And he's like, man, you've done too much. You need to just chill. I was like, no, you don't get it, bro. You don't get it. And so I left and I went to my grandmother's. He called me the next day. I ignored his call. And then, you know, within 8 hours of leaving, they raided the hotel room. He got arrested. If I would have went arrested for that with the pistol charge and stuff like that, I definitely wouldn't be here now, but who knows how long it would have been. And I think that was God's grace. I've been sober since that day. That was January 1st. And this time I came into the rooms and I said, I'm a scared little boy and I don't know how to live life on life's terms and I need help and I'm willing to do whatever you guys say. And within my first 90 days, they asked me to speak at Saturday Night Fever, kind of do the first 15-minute little deal like you did. And I was shaking the podium and there was a lot more fucking people than this, man. And I was scared and I just kind of shared, you know, a quick little drunk-a-log. And it was cool because people, you know, started coming up to me being like, hey, you know, good job or whatever. And then I started sharing honestly in meetings and I got with my sponsor and I finally did the steps the way they're supposed to. I finally got honest on the steps. I had a lot of secrets that I didn't think had to do with my alcoholism, but anything that brought me guilt, shame, remorse, fear, things like that, you know, I told him. And then he didn't really bat an eye, and I felt more a part of. So it was good. And I, with my whole God thing, you know, like thinking that I'm destined for hell, and nothing I can do can save my soul and all that crazy stuff. Might be true, I don't know. But what I do know is that I can't stay sober without God, and I definitely can't stay sober without AA. So I think what God wants me to do is be an AA. And that was kind of my higher power. And my decision to turn my will and my life over to a power greater than myself, that was turning my will and my life over to AA. And that's what I did. And I made a decision to go through the rest of the steps. After going through my character defects and that shit, man, I don't even really think about drinking. I got so much other shit to worry about now. I'm constantly struggling with just being a decent person, you know, and it's not easy. It's not easy. I'm a dick, you know. It's funny, but it's not really. But I try to, you know, and that's what you said. You said practice, not perfection, man. I can look back 6 months ago. I could look back a year ago, a year and a half ago, even when I first came in, and I can see, you know, I'm coming up on 2 years now, and I can see the progress. I can see the progress, you know, and I pray. I just got fired from a job due to character defects, and I planned on working there for the rest of my life. I sacrificed a lot to work there, and it was one of the worst things that had ever happened to me, like losing that job. And it almost felt like losing a family member or something, you know what I mean? I was like, I woke up and thought, or I should say like a girlfriend, like a girl that you really care about. Like, you know, you go to bed thinking about it, you wake up thinking about it, and you're like, I need to stop thinking about it kind of thing. And that's how I felt about that job, man. I was just like so depressed. And but I stayed sober, and I realized that, you know, I was powerless over the situation. It might have been unfair, might not have been. But either way, it's God's plan, not mine. And staying sober through that and getting another job and stuff like that has helped me grow, because now I go to my job every single day, and the first thing I do when I get in there is I go to the bathroom to pray. And I pray, you know, thank you for letting me have the job and let me be a service and all that stuff. And And the job that I'm working now is actually where I was working at before working there. And they took me back, and they were saying how great I was and how happy they were to have me back, and it felt really good. And I had that job in sobriety before fucking up the other one. And no job has ever taken me back. I burnt every bridge. I can't use any. I make up references. I'll call up my friends. I call up my friends and be like, hey, man, if this place calls you, you know, you were my manager, okay? And so it felt really good, you know, and I'm doing good there, and things are good. You know, what else? I do service commitments, like I go to detox. I share with people. I try to pick out new people that are in the rooms and talk to them, you know, offer them a ride. I've been hanging out with a new guy today, and he shares some of the shit. Like, when he's talking, I'm just like, dude, just like me. It makes me feel like I'm still in the right place, you know. Definitely. Let's see. I'm a bartender. That's kind of funny, right? I realize every day, you know, I work in a high volume bar, and I don't really want to drink, you know. Like, that's, I don't want to drink. It's the jig is up, you know. Like, it's just not something that I want to put in my body. But I see people every day drink with impunity. You know what I mean? Normal people come up, have a couple drinks, and leave half of it and walk away. And I'm just like, fuck, I'm an alcoholic, you know? And then, you know, like when you're at the, like on Friday and Saturday nights, the place I work at, it's kind of like a nightclub. So there's about 300 people pretty much there all the time. And I'm pretty good with faces, you know, like serving drinks. And I probably serve, you know, several hundred, if not 1,000 drinks on a night like that. And, you know, for a minute there, sometimes I think like, man, I wish I could be a part of this, you know, and then I'll see at the end of the night, there's, out of those 300 people, there's like maybe 3 to 5 at the most that are still there fucking trying to buy drinks. And I'm like, wow, you know, that's what I am right there, you know. Or usually I got kicked out by security already. But so it really, it shows me like, you know, I do have a disease. I am an alcoholic. I do have alcoholism. I didn't think for a long time I would say I'm an addict because it sounded better. But I'm addicted to anything, you know, and I guess I came around long enough to catch alcoholism. It's kind of contagious around here. And now that I got alcoholism, you know, I have a solution, you know, and I don't need all those pills they tried to give me. When I was in the juvenile prison, you know, they tried to give me a pill to fix everything. Nothing against that if that's what you need. But for me, all the answers I needed for my life and to feel good and a part of and accepted and be a better person and not lose my temper, all that I found in the steps and trusting in God. I think I'm the best person I've been since ever, you know, and I'm still pretty bad. I'm still a pretty big scumbag. So I know I have a lot of room to grow and change. And I know if I keep coming back and doing things like this and sharing, that I will. So I guess that's all I got. Thank you for letting me share.